This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Tom Romilly.
Jane Bolton.
Colleen Romilly.
And I'm Stuart Burks. So you bought the business, so what was it called? Did you rename it?
No, I didn't. The previous owner had renamed it Ashurst Engineering and Construction Company.
Okay, yep.
So we named ours Ashurst Engineering Construction Company 1973 Limited.
Okay.
And that was the beginning.
And how did you feel when you walked into work and think, this is mine rather than I'm an employee?
I think you were energised, weren't you? Yeah. Because he also... I had a clerical background and a bookkeeping background and whatnot, so... I was a stenographer, shorthand typist, as well. So by this time, we had an office, and so I became his right hand woman and could legally sleep with him, among other things. You see, sleep with the boss.
Bob a week and sleep with the boss.
So how old were your children at this stage?
Golly. School age. Wayne was at high school, I think. Our youngest one was here in Ashurst. But this is the interesting thing. The caravan that the boys had been using when they were on the constructional gang during the week had become a bit old. So we brought that into the backyard of the engineering shop. And after primary school, our daughter... because the caravan was big, would bring three of her mates quite constantly, and they had blackboards, and they had pretend cooking things. They had books and whatnot. So she could come across the road from school, which was literally where we were, and Wayne would be much later getting home on the on the bus. So,
So it worked out all right.
Our children were at school.
So where were you living at that stage?
Initially in this little old cottage.
Cambridge.
Yes. And then we had actually then moved up to a lifestyle block at Pahongana Road. Where Wayne was mad on horses, and we had 14 acres, which he could use and whatnot. Tom and I became the owners. And the bank manager, when he left Westpac Bank, there was a farewell to him, and Tom had to make the speech. And in his introduction, the bank manager said he had never seen anyone go into business with so little collateral, and he just complimented us on what we'd achieved in a short time. Just was hard work, but also we lived simply, and there were the good years. So you've got to give that the time, a bit of credit.
When was it that you?
1973.
73.
Things were booming.
So just before things turned bad.
And we were established by then.
But there's a big difference running your own business and being an employee. You've got all the, you've got to sort out new jobs, and have you got enough to keep everyone employed and all the financial stuff. Were you prepared for that, or you worked together on that?
And we had a good accountant who was the accountant for the previous owners. And his name was Farquhar. What was his first name?
Russell
Farquhar, exclusive brethren, brilliant. And the previous owners advised us to stick with the same accountant because continuity under the circumstances was the name of the game. And because we'd taken over a working business, there was already contracts on buildings in advance. So we took over the staff, and we took over the contracts as well.
But then you had to do the sort of sales type work, or did it just come in automatically? Did you have to go out to try and get new work?
No. Work just kept on coming.
Yeah.
But you had a good name though, Tom, and obviously because you've been working for them previously, the farmers, everybody knew you, so that's why you would have got the contracts as well.
Yeah, I suppose. And it was local, you see, and the big rural community.
It's quite interesting, you know, the first,
we were lucky
first year. Well, we took over in the June, and Christmas time came. I mean, we were penniless, and we were reliant on people paying their wages, paying their
paying the bills. So
because we had to pay Christmas wages, didn't we? In those days,
anyway,
for the staff to go on holiday.
January came, and this particular client came in and said that he was sorry, but he couldn't pay our bill today, this month, because he was taking his wife to Fiji.
Taking his family to Fiji?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And after he left, I said, God's trousers. We can't even go to Palmerston.
It's true. It's so true.
A particular farmer.
But I can remember we were enjoying it so much, getting our teeth into it and knowing we were capable of it. That we went away for a break ourselves eventually, and when we knew we were coming home, we couldn't get back to get into it, which is a lovely feeling, isn't it? If you
stimulating challenge,
enjoy what you want to do. By this time, we had a hardware shop as well and sold grain and paint and nuts and bolts and motor mowers and things like that.
Now this is interesting because at that time it was possible to have sort of a smallish business, like a family business, and survive, but now a lot of these things have become sort of either national or international chains. Have you noticed the change in the area?
The convenience of coming down to you, and I want to put a paint or whatever it was he wanted, was so good. And once you left, I had to go to Palmerston North to get it.
Yeah,
that's right. Because you were in a local farm,
we were on top of Saddle Road,
so you were farming there, and you just,
the convenience was fabulous. Once you sold.
But you see, we worked 5, you know, the week, and the boys, we still had an outside gang, but Tom wasn't on it. We worked Saturday mornings as well.
Well, that was unusual for those days?
No, I don't think so, Jane.
The shops were open in Palmerston North on Saturday, Sunday.
No, it was still the Kiwi weekend in 78 when I came. That was just going.
So when you bought it in 78, so 78?
No, 73 we bought.
73.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you would have been there through the oil crisis and all those economic shocks.
We had decimal currency came in. We have metric measurements came in. Had ACC
nuts and
come
bolts.
Into Tom?
PAYE.
I couldn't believe how Tom, without his academic background, was way ahead of his staff and everybody else, converting everything to metric and whatnot. He just did it. And all his plans he had to rehash.
And the tools as well. Did you need a complete new set of tools if they're
We had a lathe by then. Had to change over that. What I did was, on Sunday night, Sunday afternoon, I went down to the shop and I found every rule that I could find.
From the boys.
From the boys.
Boys'
went through
desks.
Their toolboxes and pinched all their rules out of there and put a metric rule in place.
Oh, okay, that's clever.
Because when they come there, what's this bloody thing, Well, that's what we're going to work with from now on.
And don't convert, go straight to the metric. Don't try and convert.
So it was challenging, but we were up to the task.
But even though, I mean, nuts and spanners and so on, they were all, you had to go for metric, or weren't you using them so much?
There wasn't so many, as far as spanners were concerned, there wasn't the quantity of vehicles, machinery that was imported from Europe or Japan.
Okay, yeah.
So it came in, you know.
So that was more phased.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, but you had to be able to work with both. All the lathe tools, all the measurements for lathes, like micrometers and that sort of thing, will have to be changed over.
Yeah.
But you still had to have the imperial. So when you got, because most of the stuff was imperial, there's only the odd things. Which was metric, and it can't measure metric with imperial. So
was your work turning over more to management rather than hands on by that stage?
Probably.
Yeah, probably.
Supervision. The interesting thing I found was that at stages we had up to 12 staff, you know, inside and outside staff. But I did notice if Tom happened to be away at a rotary meeting or talking to the steel people in town, the staff would work a lot better if he was around than if he was.
Well, that's confidence for you, isn't it?
Yeah, that's generally speaking, you know. They were very good. You had to give and take a little bit, but there was.
So you had the same staff for a long time? Or was it much
too? Yeah, the basics here.
It was pretty amazing.
It's good management.
But the hardware shop had got so big, really, that with the office work and me with the kids, because I wasn't working full time all the time.
Yeah.
We eventually had help in the hardware shop as well. And at one stage, my dad, who retired at about 80, he had been in hardware all his life, collar and tie and that sort of thing. He came to work for us for a few years before he fully retired.
Yeah. So is that why you went into the shop? Because from the family background?
No, we had already gone into hardware. In fact, the previous owners had started the hardware shop, hadn't they, Tom?
Yeah.
And Tom found also that it gave you better buying power if you were a retail shop.
Yeah.
The nails and getting everything more in bulk, you could buy it at tradesman rates.
So you'd be buying in bulk and then break them down for the individual.
Used to go down to Wellington, Duthies and that sort of thing, and the hardware places.
Yeah. So you'd go through a lot more through the shop than you would in the business itself, you think? No,
the engineering was the biggest part.
Most through the... I don't mean turnover, I mean in terms of use of... Yeah, you were talking about nails and things, so you'd use a few nails yourself and sell a lot through the shop.
And you weighed them out, you know, on the scales with the weights that go up and down, the big steel or iron weights and whatnot. So you weighed them out, for goodness sake.
Yeah. So how did you didn't, they weren't all in plastic bags then?
No.
Obviously. So how would you pack
wrap
them
in, we had big rolls of paper.
Yeah.
Remember a great big rolls on and a cutting.
That's right.
And they used to.
And tie them up with string or sellotape or.
Don't know. Yeah.
String.
I think we did have string on one of those dispensers.
Okay. Yeah.
Didn't we? Yeah.
I mean, it was all right. We didn't have the plastic problems that we got today.
Yes. No. Yeah. That's right.
Probably used a lot of newspaper too, didn't we?
You had paper bags. I remember buying nails in paper bags.
Oh, really?
You took them out of your weighing thing into the bag.
Oh, okay.
I can remember that.
Really? Yeah. And bags of wheat and dog biscuits and that sort of thing. And then there was a guy up the road, his name was Barry Gooch, and he was manufacturing aluminium garden furniture.
Mm-hmm.
So we started buying aluminium garden furniture from, you know, tables and chairs and whatnot, and we'd put that outside the shop. Well, and people travelling through, you'd be amazed how much aluminium garden furniture we sold, which was another.
Well, he was lucky to have the outlet.
He was, wasn't he? Yeah, and he would also make those aluminium fake hinges for garden gates and that sort of thing. So. And latches. So there was all of those sort of things we sort of went into, hey? So that lasted, what, Tom, for 15 years, didn't it? And your health clapped out a bit, didn't it?
The boss's stress.
And fortuitously, a brilliant precision engineer had just come to live in Eshurst, of all places, came to us and asked if he could rent a portion of the workshop to do some engineering work, to get cram. And we said we'd think about it. And because of his health and whatnot, we sort of thought, well, what say we offer him the whole business? At this stage, Tom was 55. So we offered Norbert and Ursula Drismala the whole business, staff and all.
Yeah.
6 weeks later, they were in and we were out.
So that was early retirement, was it?
But Tom, you didn't retire. You then went and worked or helped Hugh Akers, didn't you?
Because Hugh, this is a friend of mine.
Broadland Station.
And Broadland Station over here.
But as well at that time, though, I mean, if you were 55 and then the... Was it even the compulsory retirement age was 60?
Wasn't compulsory, but was, that was when people got the...
Certainly for a pension. I think out at the university, people had to retire at 60, most of them. It was early, but not not particularly vacancy.
he was a good client of mine, see, of ours. So anyway, we went for a holiday, didn't we, afterwards?
Lovely holiday, didn't we?
Had a couple of months down south and taking roads about. So anyway, he came back, you see, and Hugh came up to me one day and he said, I've got a job for you, Tom. A couple of days. I was there 17 years.
Remembering that Tom was raised on this place that he was asked to go and work on again.
55, and you were there for 17 years. So you finally stopped working at what, 72?
At 55.
No,
in the year.
Another 17 years.
Yeah, 89. Because Norbert Drismala, who bought the business, called it Ashurst Engineering and Construction, 1989. So he kept the name.
Well known. But I mean, you were then working from 55. You were working for another 17 years before you finally. So that was part time, I take it, was it? Or
It was sort of part time. You can please yourself.
So you were sort of about 72 when you finally sort of stopped work.
He still goes over there. He's 86 this year, and he still goes over there.
But that's hobby as well, isn't it? So when you went to work for Hugh, you went as his mechanic, sort of thing.
Gopher.
Oh, that'll do. Yeah.
I worked on a we worked on a system where I got paid for the hours I worked. Right. I got no holiday pay, no nothing like that. Just the hours I worked. It was a system that we worked out amongst ourselves.
Good.
Him and I. But I had the free run of the place.
And it gave you a bit of flexibility as well.
So what was your job with Hugh officially?
Gopher.
In the
apart
workshop.
Apart from the gopher, it was in the workshop with his machine.
Making gates and doing the maintenance on the vehicles all that sort
and
of thing.
And the machinery.
All the machinery, looking after that.
So when did the museum come into it?
Well, much later.
A minute. The museum. What is the museum?
Well, the family, the Akers family that own the property here, they own also property in Tapuna, Linton. They also own another property at Opiki. Right. Now, they've owned these properties for many years. And they never got rid of anything. Machinery and that wise it got put in the shed.
Yeah.
We bought a new one.
Okay.
So the old one got put in there.
Or under a tree.
Oh yeah, some of them were under a tree. Most of them were put in a shed. So when Hugh came to the idea of this museum, all this old stuff got hauled out, and it was my job to make it go.
So it was his own personal idea, hey, let's make our own museum.
Is it
a public museum?
No.
Undercover. So he built a building.
Yeah, he built it.
So what's the idea? It's not a public museum.
It's
so
a family museum.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, they never got rid of anything, okay? The family never got rid of anything. It's put away.
Yep.
Now, the National Geographic magazine, is volume one, number one, right through.
Yes, okay.
Did you catch
how many of those? That, yeah, oh, well, a lot, yes. Yeah.
Volume one, number one.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. It's only about that thick.
Yeah,
but
that's quite.
Yeah, well,
Auckland Weekly?
Mm.
Auckland, not all the Auckland Weeklies, but anything that had something of interest nationally was saved.
So it's not just machinery that they've got in there?
No, there's an archives room there.
Yeah.
And big, big archives room.
Yeah, that's... It's so got all sorts of things in it.
So it's farm machinery, magazines and things, and what else?
Telephones.
Okay.
Yeah, all sorts of telephones, you know, the original things here that wound up.
Crank
also the portable ones, which was like a brick.
Oh, the early portable phones. Yep.
And old shearing plants.
Oh, yeah.
All set up, hasn't they?
All working.
No, not all working, but all the machinery is, or was, I don't know whether it is now, because...
So it's all laid out sort of for display, or it's just...
Oh, it's beautifully laid out.
Yeah. So how big is this?
Far out.
Probably...
1,000 square feet, would it be?
Probably more than that.
Be more than that? The archives room would be about 1,000 square feet, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It's probably 60 metres long. Mm-hmm. 50 metres long anyway.
Yeah.
And probably 20 metres wide.
Okay, yeah.
15, 20 metres wide.
Is that the whole building?
It's the whole world building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Concrete floor. And
yeah, wow.
And the archives room is shut off for climate control.
Yes, okay,
So there's no damp,
the
no dampness.
Yeah. Temperature control.
A lot of family history in there.
Yeah.
Photos.
Okay. Photos and that sort of thing.
And documents.
So it's a very large family, is it?
Not particularly large, no.
Okay.
But, yeah.
So, is the family all interested in this then? Or?
Yeah.
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 Not as interested as you, though. No. They've got
but they all
distractions.
Help.
And
yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
That's quite an achievement.
No, old tractors and that sort of thing, there is.
Hmm.
Very old tractor there, 1912 or something. Three wheeler, very few of them in the country.
Mm. And the old gigs, the horse drawn vehicles are all in there as well. Mm. There's a few of those, isn't there?
The wagonette that carted the wool out and that sort of thing is still there.
Yeah.
So, how many people know about this?
Whoever Hugh wants to let know.
Oh, it's just, yeah, it's more prior, just, it's basically a hobby.
Yeah, it's just a family thing.
Yeah. So your work up there is basically in the museum, is it? Or around the farm?
No, more.
Not now.
No, okay.
But do you still go over and give Hugh a hand with things?
I grade the road.
That's important.
Tom, how many k's of gravel road is there?
7 k's.
7 k's of gravel roads. From
that's starting from Saddle Road right up to the Woolshed and right up to Ramai Bridge.
Mm.
Is that 7 k's long?
Not to Ramai Bridge.
It's not seven. Oh. Not 7 k's, is it?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, 7 k's.
Mm. There's a lot of traffic, sheep trucks.
Yeah,
and
number four line goes nearly to number four line.
Okay.
Do you remember where the Arbour House South School was?
Yes.
Well, it's on that corner. If you come down that road, it comes out there. Lemmy's used to have a dairy farm at the other end of it. Terence Lemmy.
Yes, yeah.
Is it Terence? No, who was it? Bernard Lemmy. Bernard,
yeah. Okay, so do you grade the road up to the house now?
No.
Who does that?
I think.
Well, it doesn't really need it because it's all gorge rock.
Oh, yes. They carved that in, didn't they?
Tom, one of your jobs when you were working for you was digging the drains, wasn't it, each year, to clear the drains with a digger. So that was another machine you used in addition to the grader, wasn't that?
Yeah.
So they had their own grader.
Yeah.
They've still got it, you see. That's what Tom uses.
We had a horse-drawn one to start with. The old-fashioned horse-drawn one, but we pulled it behind the tractor.
Oh,
did you have to adapt it so that it would do that, Tom?
No, it was already adapted.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But,
So I suppose with your area of work, though, the New Zealand number 8 wire idea, you'd be doing a lot of improvisation with things, were you? And designing your own
Tom, I remember too, when Christmas Eve, when we were in business, a local farmer, Stuart Hart, had trouble with his well. And New Year's, Christmas Eve, you were drilling out his, or retrieving his pump. What was that about? Because that was another job you did as well, was doing those sort of jobs. So
He had a submersible pump down a well. And he employed Palmer's North firm to lift it out because it wasn't working, you see. Because it's Christmas time, cows needed all the rest of it. Milking shed didn't have any water.
So a submersible pump, it was what, an electric pump?
Yeah.
Or something that he could just put down the well and it would pump the water out?
Yeah, it's a thing about that long.
Oh, about what?
About that round? A
couple of metres, 1.5 metres, something like that.
Yeah.
About 150 round. Mil round. Yep.
So anyway, he rang me up, said, "We got a problem," because what happened was, they didn't do it properly and they got it halfway up and the pipe came undone and that dropped down and broke the electric cord. All that singing, here it is down there. So they packed up and went away. And here it is
on Christmas Eve.
So
I went up there and with a bit of ingenuity.
Tom, did you have the crane truck that you used, didn't you, that you'd sort of engineered?
Because the biggest problem was that the pipe's only that round, you know. And of course this cord had gone down there. Of course the pipe was still there with a thread with a bit of thread on it. But of course you couldn't find it for the bloody cord. So I devised a means of cutting the cord down there and then screwing onto the pipe and lifted the thing up.
So what, you mean remotely you were doing all that? Or you dropped a guy down the well to
You can't get down there.
It's all done mechanically.
It's just
Ingenious.
Oh, very
good. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I made a cone-shaped thing. It was just the size of the pipe. The well pipe.
Yeah.
With a thread inside.
Yeah.
And sharpened the edges, you see. And the theory was, keep turning it until you cut the rubber hose, the rubber electric cord, so that you get to the... And eventually keep lifting, you see, it's not, hadn't got hooked up yet, hadn't got hooked up. We're hooked on, so I screwed a bit more on.
Yeah.
And we pulled it out.
I bet Stuart was pleased, because how could he milk his cows without...
Well, I mean, he could get away with it for a couple of nights, but... So that was all right.
Adding the variety of jobs, you know, that they got to do.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.